And I thought what we would do this morning, as we discuss where art is and how it is, that we would look at some very, very contemporary examples of art and see if we can't find in them an evidence of hope. There's a problem here. First, there's a problem of apologizing, because if we insist too much that there are things where most of us can't see them, the result sounding very much like it. Secondly, there's a problem of perhaps being so optimistic that we cancel out the effort of the original work. And of course, there is the story of the little boy optimist and the little boy pessimist, you know, who for Christmas were given gifts that tried to change them a bit. And the little boy pessimist was given a pony, and he didn't like it because he knew he had to clean up after it. And the little boy optimist was given a room full of manure and started digging around as soon as he came, as soon as he could get in there, singing and laughing because he knew there was a pony in there. The first reaction that I think most of us have to modern art is one of being had, that someone is playing a joke on us, and that there are a few select people like artists and art dealers and a couple of patrons scattered about that know what all of this is about, but the rest of us don't. And we get very defensive about it. And the first reaction in getting defensive about something that you don't understand is to laugh at it. Now that's a sign of hope. If you can laugh at something you don't understand, that's better than your other option, at least. And the other option is to get terribly angry. Now, some of us have gone through the experience up here at home of getting terribly angry at something that we weren't sure we understood, and something that happened that sort of gave us the impression that a few people knew what was going on, but most of us didn't. And it was all built around art, but we got angry at it. We felt we were being hacked, that a few people were playing tricks on us, and what was actually happening was that only a few people were suggesting change. The same thing happened to a couple of us last night. I, for one, was angry that somebody got a wild hair that the whole village should be silent. I am not the kind of person that enjoys being told when to be silent. I like being silent, and I wish we were silent more often. I just kind of resent it when somebody says, all right, folks, now is the time you need to be silent. And what is my first reaction? To get sarcastic, to get mocking, to start whispering,
Mom?
And of course, there were a lot of people at work last night. I don't know how many of you heard the little leprechauns cackling around. Very strange thing. A lot of people visually oriented, wanting to make a visual statement about their hope, working in silence and darkness. It was enough just to shatter my whole illusion about silence. And it became a very meaningful and important thing. Maybe sometimes we should be told which. Maybe sometimes we should be told what to look at. And if it's impossible for us to look at it, make the image so spectacular, make it so outrageous, that it's impossible to ignore. One has the feeling that my heart is trying in some of its worst moments to be outrageous for its own sake. But underlying the intention of art now, as it's always been, is the intention to say, there are things going on that we are not aware of. There are things going on that even the artist is not aware of, but he has got to try and point these things out to people. He has got to simply say what he feels and hope that in the saying of it, there are those optimists that will try and find the pony in there someday. I am not suggesting that out of all of art there are elements and signs of hope. One would like to say that all art is religious. One would like to make statements that the very process of putting down an egregious, horrifying image is a sign of hope because at least the fellow put it down. I myself can't go that far. The avant-garde today in art is so disgusting, so hopeless, that I personally find it to be almost anti-Christ. I'll give you only one example, and that's all. And after the one example, I think you'll be able to find hope in virtually anything. It's German, as you might suspect. There was an artist who committed himself to the work of art to the extent that he became the work of art. And some of you I know from conversation are having difficulty thinking of art as a process thing, because we've been so accustomed to thinking of it as an object. But the process of art has become actually an art form now. It has become a medium so that you walk in and interrupt art in its process. This fellow's process was simply to slice pieces of himself and have a visual documentation of the slicing. He thought of himself and presented himself as meat. Your image last night, Carol. Without hope, that is exactly what we are, meat. Incredible, at Valparaiso University, the fraternity boys stand on the frat house wall and call that word to the girls passing by. An ultimate sign of hopelessness, and this guy just sliced away at himself with a friend, I guess, of his friend, standing by taking visual documentation until he slices one slice too much. That's the Alma Mater today, and it is accompanied by other signs of hopelessness. I don't believe that all art is a sign of hope. I don't believe that any art is a sign of hope all by itself. But what has to happen is that hope, faith, joy, exuberance, love, despair, sorrow, agony, whatever it is, has to be brought to it and shared with it. That's what I think.
Let's look at some.
Conversation between a man like Chagall, and if you knew Chagall,
a conversation between Chagall and himself,
and a conversation between Chagall and his memories, and finally a conversation between Chagall and us. So that the distortions that this fellow brings to his work are, I think, distortions that we can accept and understand. They're gentle, they're loving, and here the act of love has actually transformed a man's inability to leap off of the ground and stay there. What a gift from a woman to a man, to change it in such a delightful way, you know. And so you've got out of distortion and out of change, a sign of love, a sign of gentleness, and I think possibly even a sign of hope. One wonders, when you put down H-O-P-E, what that means. And you gotta realize that all art is symbol. And the word hope, I guess, is symbol also. And when you deal with symbols, you got a real problem in the anticipation of what the meaning of the other person's symbol is for that person. If we all simultaneously say hope right now, how many definitions of that word are we dealing with? I think we're dealing with as many as we've got people who use the word. Not one definition. And so we've got an artist's definition of hope. We've got a viewer's definition of hope. And the best that we can anticipate is that they bring those together and maybe even wind up with a third definition. Giacometti, who saw the whole world in a furled eyebrow. I wish I could have found one of his Bridges of the Nose paintings. He said, in the bridge of the nose is the entire universe. And if you'd ever stop and look at people's bridges of noses, I think you'd see what he was saying. Carry on an intense conversation with someone. Share with them something which they've never had, and watch the universe at work between their eyes. It is an incredible and very hopeful experience. Coming together. Some of you may have seen this thing. Is it Rotterdam or Amsterdam?
Rotterdam,
yeah.
The resurrection of the city. It is possible for, I think, an artist to depict a symbol of hope in such a way as to be a community thing, as to have some kind of community identification. This is, for me, a kind of human example of what the phoenix is all about. The resurrection from the ashes. A kind of struggling and searching upward. There are other signs that are very similar to this. I think of, for example, the St. Louis Arch. That beautiful thread of stainless steel that hangs on the waterfront and is actually a sign of hope for that town, which was going through a period of such
rapid decay, that's my child, I got a right to say it, incredible ripping off of whole communities that were still full of hope. I kind of consider the ghetto as a place where there is hope, which is why I resent having those black communities like Harlem and places like it being called ghettos as though there were no hope there. Incredible hope. The hopeless, I don't know whether we've got a sign for the hopeless or a word for the hopeless community, but if we've got a word, I think we ought to stick it on the bedroom communities that are out in the suburbs, where the husbands leave the women hopeless all day long, and they got nothing to do but drink and gossip and window shop. That's, you know, that's a kind of a hopeless community. So varying forms, various shapes, are going to say things to an artist, and obviously I don't even want to say it to an artist. They're going to say things to some people and not say things to others. And in the struggle of a man trying to break away from traditional form, trying to set a different path for himself, explore areas of material and shape and design that have not been explored before, he is a demonstration of a hope within. And of course, a Brancusi wound up determining for art, I think maybe for sculpture, for all times, in this bird image, a kind of free flight, an open-endedness. But in the process of doing it, he brought it down. He synthesized it. He reduced it. He made it elementary. And I'm kind of trying to get a lesson from a man who's got all this stuff going around him, who's got materially the whole world to choose from. He can pile things one on top of the other if he wants to, but he elects to take very, very elementary and simple forms and create out of them symbols, motifs of a life that goes on beyond our own limits.
There the imposition of the shadow as something again.
Oh, right. And the real destructive thing about this thing is not itself, it's not what it has in itself, it's the little sign on the block underneath that says, do not touch. That to me is sacrilegious. It's pessimistic, you know. It is hopeless that you walk into a dark room with a shaft of metal leaping upward, and there's an obvious need to go up there and just rub your hands along the side of that thing and see where it goes. The do not touch sign is an evidence that art is still operative within the realm of idolatry. New material. Taking the forms of our specific moment, steel and glass, and making images out of them that do have a heritage. I think of this, the heritage of the bell box, as being a kind of reliquary. A reliquary for space, though, not for the three thorns off of the crown. Your bulb just burnt out, I think. The thing I think we want to talk about or understand when we discuss hope as a thing that can take a visual form is that it is possible for us not to wait for another man to give us an image. The tendency, I think, is for most of us to sit and wait for the artist to come up with a new song. And one of the most
hopeful signs, I think, that the artist is giving us in our time is that he is doing art which cannot be confined to the museum. There is only one place for it, and that's out in the, if you want to call it that, the real world. It's like a couple of days ago, we had a vesper called Why Seek Ye the Living Among the Dead. I kind of thought that that might be a good sign to have over the museum. The art museum, why seek ye the living among the dead? If you actually are seeking the living, you know, which one has to wonder about, are you really that concerned? Are any of us really that concerned about what is living in us? And if we are, why do we take it, design it specifically for a wall, call it a not living room, but call it a museum, and separate it from where people are? I kind of resent it. And I think art in general in this particular age is also resenting it. And so art is being made now not for museums. There's no way that it can be contained in there. The size, for one thing. It is so gigantic you can't even get it into the door. The materials are of such a nature that one is not able to have it in a museum. I'm thinking of light. And one of the most significant elements in contemporary art now is, as a media, is light. The use of laser, the use of holograms, three-dimensional projected images. Thanks much. Three-dimensional projected images that can converse with one another and sit down on projected furniture. That kind of thing requires a technology which just isn't available inside of a museum. Corporations have to provide it. Conceptual art, which drops bags of flour every 500 yards across a Scottish landscape in a regulated pattern, so that the only way that you can see it is from an airplane. One might say, that is really far out. It is far out enough for a whole people of pre-Columbian times to have done exactly the same thing. You can go down to Cahokia, Illinois, and find snakes undulating all over the landscape from where you're standing. It's a mound. But over above, it becomes serpentine. And they're dealing with something which is only in evidence from a great height. But they never could get up there. They couldn't even see their own work and the results of it. There are examples like this all over the place. It was probably Jackson Pollock, though, that did the whole thing. And from this man on, up until our present time, the process of making art has, I think, been a much more hopeful process. He said, the classic tradition, the way in which you have to do an image as far as a motif, as far as a structure, as far as an idea is concerned, is no longer valid. Any way you can get an idea down, do it. And the ideas that he got down were so offensive and at their outset because they represented only the outpourings of an imagination, at least to them. They were too individual. They were not really concerned about his living. Became something to joke about. They called him the king of the drip and drool school. And we look at it today, and I think because a lot has been built from him and around him, we are able to say that here was a man that freed up a whole process of expression. so that when you get to the work, you are seeing nothing but man free. Man free. Untied from all of the tradition that said he had to do it in a specific way. The next thing for us to do is say, to hell with tradition, and then we lose our hope. But some of the images that he brought to it are images that you can also find on the forest floor if you look hard enough. You'll find them in the tailings, you'll find them in the woods. That wasn't what he was painting, but the reality of these things, the tangibleness of them, has made us look for realities and things that we normally would not have looked. And now we see patterns and textures that we normally would have overlooked. So what art is doing is trying to make us see in ways that we would normally not have thought possible. This is not a rejection of old ways of seeing, it's an enlargement on new processes. The dripping and the drooling has gone to all kinds of extremes. None of them really excessive as far as I can see. This is one of the most significant of the black artists in America, and he has found a way of taking this process and turning it into a kind of soft sculpture, like warped rainbows. The staining of canvas, instead of the building of the paint, the using of transparent colors in washes and color. Color has become so important that what you ask, what is it? And the artist really wants to get sarcastic, I think, because what it is it. It is. Whatever it is in it. I mean, it's like you don't go to a building that is unlike any building you have ever seen before, that is so wild in its architecture, and say, what is it? You may wonder, why did it get to be like that? But you don't say, what is it? But a painting, for some other reasons, always have to justify themselves on bases that are outside of themselves. And maybe finding in the meaning of a work all there is to know inside of it, a celebration of color, a celebration of light, a celebration of movement and motion, a celebration of I am. Maybe being able to find the whole reason for its being inside of it, you know, is a thing that is so impossible for us that it eliminates an element of art for us. Now, hope, obviously, by its very definition, refers to things outside of itself. But to be able to look inside of a person and find in there signs of hope that are not your signs is a way of setting up a conversation and learning is changing. Celebration, joy. I think hope takes on so many different kinds of visions, so many kinds of appearances. Some people would rather hope silently, and some people would rather hope with pinwheels. Some people would rather hope in conversations with other people, and other folks would rather simply write down the hope that is in them. I think, though, that at least for today, we ought not let anyone keep their hopes to themselves. They all have a kind of beauty. They all have a kind of elegance. It is. You're laughing.
I wonder if you would laugh if I told you that these were just simply the labels of Campbell's soup cans that I got from the kitchen and pasted down. Why you are laughing is because you know they are not. You know that this is a $9,000 painting and that this painting is only of something that you have bumped into every day of your life. You may also be laughing self-consciously because you wish you had thought of it first. You resent so elementary, so simple an idea being turned into profits. But look at what is actually happening here, people. Look at what we've got. If it is, and I think for the first time in the whole history of man, I think, probably give you an idea of what I know about the history of man, but I think it is possible to be unable to differentiate between what you can purchase in the art gallery from what you can purchase in the store, except for the price. And the prices are getting closer and closer. Now, if you can go into a grocery store, reach for a can of Campbell's soup, take it to the checkout counter and be charged $4,800 for it, simply because on the bottom it has the name of a man, Andy Warhol. And you say, oh, excuse me, I got the wrong can. And you go back and check on the bottom, no Andy Warhol. 2 for $29. I don't know what they are. Something like that, okay? If it is not possible for you visually to differentiate between what is mass-produced and what is the work of art, what an exciting time we've got, people. You're going to have to make up your mind. Is everything art or is nothing? We've come to that point. We're either going to have to say it's all art or none of it's art. I looked at this thing with such delight. There was another version of this hamburger that was in an outdoor exhibit of contemporary sculpture in the Louvre. And I happened to be there at the day it opened, and they had to unload this hamburger. It was 17 feet across. There was a big, huge pickle on the top that was being held onto the bun with a broom handle. It was pointed at one end. That was the toothpick, okay? The lettuce was enormous sheets of floppy paper mache flapping around in the breeze, and this enormous crane was lifting this gigantic hamburger up in the air, and it was raining. Have any of you attended a homecoming procession in the rain and watched the floats dissolve and the colors running down the covers and Miss Hoosits of What's Its Year with her hair and her mascara, everything? It's the cake in MacArthur Park. It was all going into the gutter. And here was this incredible work of art dissolving in the rain, and all the young artists of France were dancing around, and I almost wasn't sure whether it was celebration of the hope that is in us or a kind of veil we cry to be sort of an image. The worship of art in the process of dissolving. The collection of things that are important to us paying particular attention to them. And art that we make for ourselves in the process of walking by it, changing it, making it become something, stopping where we want to stop, saying, ooh, I like it there. And somebody else down the road likes it somewhere else. It becomes a unique thing for each of us. The celebration of pure color and light. Can you see it? I wish this room were pitch black and you would see a blue that just halates and actually presents a cruciform. Barney Newman, you old Jew, celebrating light, and he titles these paintings with very much hope. Almost like Chagall. It's, who's afraid of red, yellow, and blue? That's hope. That is hope. And the lasers forming images above our cities, saying there is more to art than what you will find in museums, because life and art is all together. And probably the most hopeful sign of all is the bringing of art to the cities. Having it create a Phoenix impression, saying there is life in what we have allowed to die. There is a sign of resurrection. There is a concern for the hopeless. And the concern, as far as art is operating, is a concern for adding beauty, adding dignity, adding color, adding life. Where you'll find any of these things, you'll find hope. Thank you very much.